Jordy, I've just had a strange conversation with your assistant. Although it is 3 days until we rendezvous with Starship Victory, she
believes it has already arrived. Not the starship, my friend. The original.
Geordi points towards an immaculate model of Lord Nelson's famous flagship.
This is my gift to the Victory's Captain Zimbada.
Most unusual.
I served with him as an ensign. Sure wish he'd been in command of this Victory. Wind and sail. That's the proper way to move a ship.
But Geordi, your Starfleet specialty is antimatter power, dilithium regulators.
That's exactly why this fascinates me, Data. See, it's human nature to love what we don't have. Simpler days, huh? Anyway, stringing this rigging has made me dream of handling sails.
This is not a computer simulation.
Data, the whole point in doing something like this is to make it by hand.
Geordi, your message said urgent.
Ah, so it is. While we're waiting to rendezvous with the Victory, we have time for me to be Watson. Well, properly, your Watson.
My Watson?
Well, I've just shown you one of my dreams. Now let's go and share in one of yours.
Ah, yes. That does seem only fair.
Clancy, I'll be gone for a while, see that no one touches this.
Aye, sir, and where can I reach you?
It can be reached at 221 B Baker Street.
Sir?
British Sky Broadcasting presents Star Trek The Next Generation, created by Gene Roddenberry. This episode is entitled Elementary, Dear Data, voiced by Roland Bean. The Federation starship Enterprise speeds through our own solar system, leaving the Earth far behind as it passes Jupiter and Saturn, heading into the unknown.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Starring Patrick Stewart as Captain Jean-Luc Picard, Jonathan Frakes as Commander William Riker, LeVar Burton as Lieutenant Geordi LaForge, Michael Dorn as Lieutenant Worf, Gates McFadden as Dr. Beverly Crusher, Marina Sirtis as Counselor Deanna Troi, and Brent Spiner as Lieutenant Commander Data. The United Federation of Planets was created to form alliances between species, and the pooling of knowledge and desire to learn pushes the boundaries of our own existence in an effort to discover more. The engines on the Enterprise power up. Explosive fusion builds to a warp power, and the Enterprise lunges forward in a flash of blue and white light.
Computer, select at random a mystery by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, in which I will play Sherlock Holmes and Lieutenant LaForge will be Dr. John Watson.
Program complete. You may enter.
Data in a velvet-collared smoking jacket and Geordi in a tweed suit look at each other in anticipation as the holodeck doors open, revealing a Victorian sitting room with dark hardwood furniture, luxuriously upholstered and lit by flickering gas mantles.
Excellent. Look at all the detail.
The holodeck door closes and immediately turns into a lead-paned window hung with heavy velvet curtains.
So you say everything in here has some significance?
Holmes collected nothing, neither trinkets nor thoughts, which were not specifically significant to him.
This?
Data grins as he recognizes the small metal object in Geordi's hand.
The emerald tie pin. Presented to Holmes by Queen Victoria after he solved the theft of the Bruce Partington plans.
Data hurries off and excitedly runs the stem of his curved briar pipe along a row of leather-bound books on a wooden shelf. His eyes gleam as he selects a book from another pile.
A copy of Whitaker's Almanac, which provided Holmes with the key to the secret code in the Valley of Fear.
Moving to the mantelpiece, he picks up a small metal box.
The snuff box of Wilhelm Gottsleck Sigismund von der Ormstein.
All right, Data. You solve the cases and get all the gifts. What do I do?
Primarily as Dr. Watson, you will keep a written record of everything I say and do. For later publication.
An antique violin lies in its case.
And the famous Holmes violin. He purchased this in a pawn shop in Tottenham Court Road for 55 shillings, which he considered to be a very good investment.
Geordie sits and begins to write in a large leather-bound notebook as Data starts to play.
In the hands of some, the violin is a wondrous thing, equally capable of stirring the soul to the heights of bliss as to the depths of despair. But, Data, that's incredible. How can you play it like that?
Merely throwing myself into the part, Watson.
But in the hands of my friend, Mr. Sherlock Holmes, the violin ceases to be a musical instrument at all and becomes...
Watson, we're about to have guests.
How could you possibly...
Be a good fellow and answer that. Let's not keep the inspector waiting.
Inspector who?
Lestrade, of course.
Holmes! Are you there, man? Thank the Almighty you're available today, Holmes. I'm in a deuce of a dilemma.
And may I say your perturbation becomes you, Inspector Lestrade, whilst simultaneously affording me the opportunity to yet again serve Queen and country.
Data, Holmes really talk like that?
Absolutely.
We need your help, Holmes.
You see, this gentleman here, the emissary of a foreign government, has been the victim of a most accidentally wicked crime.
Damn. Have they invented the electric light by now?
What, dear fellow?
Watson. Pray continue, Inspector.
To put the matter simply, Holmes, this man was accosted by gypsies intent on depriving him of his most valuable possessions. And in the process of picking his pockets clean, they also happened to bag a photograph this man was carrying.
Puffing laconically on his pipe, Data whips open the lining of the bearded foreigner's jacket, revealing a photograph.
Great Scott, the photograph!
I believe you will find, Inspector, that this emissary here works not for but against the King of Bohemia. And that photograph of the King and his mistress is to be used for blackmail. Further, upon deeper reflection, you will deduce, as did I, that...
Computer, freeze program.
Geordie looks angry.
Exit.
Data stares uncomprehendingly as Geordie storms out of the holodeck.
Geordie? Where are you going, Geordie?
I'm done.
But... Geordie, I was about to reveal the fact that the Sir is in fact a...
Geordie tries to explain himself to Data in 10 forward.
Data, what was the point in going to the holodeck?
To solve a Sherlock Holmes mystery.
Exactly, but you got them all memorized. The first time anyone opens their mouth, you've got it solved, so there's really no mystery. If there's no mystery, there's no game. No game, no fun.
Data looks sheepish.
Oh, I'm not upset with you, Data, really. It's just that we go through all the trouble to arrange the time to go down to the holodeck, to get the proper wardrobe, to get into character, and then boom! Before we even get started, you jump to the end. You see, I was looking forward to the mystery.
Then I should have extended the sequence of events.
Oh, I'm not getting through. The fun in the program, Data, was in the attempt to solve a mystery.
Is that not exactly what we were doing?
You're wasting your breath, Lieutenant. Saying that to Data is asking a computer not to compute.
Am I so different from you, Doctor? Are you able to cease thinking on command?
In medicine, I'm often faced with puzzles that I do not know the answer to.
She's right, Data. You always know the answer.
To feel the thrill of victory, there has to be the possibility of failure. And where's the victory in winning a battle you can't possibly lose?
Are you suggesting there is some value in losing?
Yes. Yes, that's the great teacher. We humans learn more often from a failure or a mistake than we do from an easy success. But not you. You learn by rote. To you, all is memorization and recitation.
Well, I don't know about all that. Deductive reasoning is one of Data's strengths.
Yes, and Holmes, too. But Holmes understood the human soul, the dark flecks that drive us, that turn the innocent into the evil. That understanding is beyond Data.
Now you're just being unfair, Doctor.
I don't think so, Lieutenant. Your artificial friend doesn't have a prayer of solving a Holmes mystery that he hasn't read.
I have read them all.
You see?
Maybe the computer could create one in Holmes style, one where you wouldn't know the outcome.
As I said, he wouldn't have a prayer.
I accept your challenge, Doctor.
Good for you, Data.
We shall return to the holodeck, where I shall dare it to defeat me. And you, madam, are invited to be a witness.
I wouldn't miss it.
Come, Watson.
Pipe clamped between his teeth, Data leads the way back to the holodeck. At the holodeck, Data now sports a deerstalker and cape.
There. I've instructed the computer to give us a Sherlock Holmes type problem, but not one written specifically by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
So this will be something new, something created by the computer.
Exactly. Will that be sufficient, Doctor?
We'll see.
Program complete. You may enter.
Geordi indicates ladies first, and the Doctor, wearing tight waisted jacket and long Victorian skirt, leads the way into the foggy bustle of a Victorian London street. Stallholders shout to attract business. A hackney carriage passes slowly, and a policeman in his silver buttoned uniform stands on the pavement.
Very impressive.
Your first visit to a holodeck, Doctor?
Well, with this level of sophistication, how does it work? The real London was hundreds of square kilometers in size.
This is no larger than the holodeck, of course, so the computer adjusts by placing images of more distant perspective on the holodeck walls.
But with an image so perfect that you'd actually have to touch the wall to know it was there. And the computer fools you in other ways.
I say, Holmes, where should we head? The theater? Rules of a concert, perhaps?
Stop him! Stop him! He stole my goods!
No! It is a ruse. This way.
Data stops beside a townhouse with a brass plaque and a bell pull on the front door.
What's over here, Data?
What are you doing, Data? Tell us.
The running youth was a ploy. The real crime is here. And the intended victim is that man, Mr. Jabez Wilson, employee of the Red-Headed League, dupe of a gang of criminals. I saw this plaque, home of the Red-Headed League, and this rope hanging from the bell, which enabled me to deduce that Mr. Jabez Wilson was headed here to meet a most distasteful and untimely demise. From this!
A snake drops to the pavement.
Fraud! You didn't deduce anything. All you did was recognize elements from two different home stories. Fraud!
Reasoning. From the general to the specific. Is that not the very definition of deduction? Is that not the way Sherlock Holmes worked?
Variations on a theme. Now do you see my point? All that he knows is stored in his memory banks. Inspiration, original thought, all the true strength of Holmes. It's not possible for our friend. I'll give you credit for your vast knowledge, but your circuits would just short out if you were confronted with a truly original mystery. It's elementary, dear Data.
Now, wait a minute, Doctor. We'll see whose circuits short out.
As Geordi gestures vigorously to Data to follow him, they fail to spot an ominous, dark-cloaked figure lurking in the shadows nearby.
Computer, arch.
Are you sure you want to put yourself through this, Lieutenant? Better wilted laurels than no laurels at all.
Computer, override previous program. Okay. A program that definitely challenges Data.
Now, it has to deal with events that he has no previous knowledge of.
Computer, in the Holmesian style, create a mystery to confound Data. With an opponent who has the ability to defeat him.
Define parameters of program.
What does that mean?
Computer wants to know how far to take the game.
You mean it's giving you a chance to limit your risk?
No, the parameters will be whatever is necessary in order to accomplish the directive. Create an adversary capable of defeating Data.
On the bridge, Worf notices something.
What was that?
Lieutenant?
An odd surge of power, sir. It's gone now.
Geordi steps away from the computer arch, which fades away. He, Data, and Dr. Pulaski walk back into the London street. Mist swirls, and somehow things look slightly different.
Interesting. The same London, but slightly different.
They move off as a pair of drunken sailors shuffle by, leaning on each other for support. In a doorway nearby, the sharp-eyed figure in the dark cloak replaces his top hat and frowns as if in deep thought. A blonde streetwalker approaches him.
Something wrong, Professor?
I feel like a new man. That dark fellow there used the word arch, and then I wonder. Arch.
He smiles in astonishment as the computer arch materializes and walks cautiously towards it, followed by the woman, her eyes wide in wonder.
What have we here?
Computer standing by.
What are you?
If you refer to the arch you ordered, it provides computer control. Do you wish to input any commands?
Not at this time.
Magic Moriarty!
The best kind, I'm sure.
But I need information.
With a determined look, he turns and sweeps off down the street. Nearby, Data and Geordi are walking slowly side by side.
Data? I mean, Holmes, old boy. What are we looking for?
For whatever finds us, my dear Watson.
They rush towards the source of the scream.
She has been abducted.
Who has?
The good doctor.
I think she's hiding. She's gonna lead you on a wild goose chase and then recount the story to everyone from here to Alpha Centauri.
Watson, The doctor has been carried away by two men. One is tall, the other is shorter, left-handed, and is employed in a laboratory.
And how do you know that?
One set of footballs is widely spaced. The other is evenly spaced, closer together. Further, on the ground, you can see the swirling scrapes made by his left shoe as he twists behind, presumably to see if he's being followed. Left-footed means left-handed. The dark colorings of the scrapes are the leavings of natural rubber, a type of non-conductive sole used by researchers experimenting with electricity. Finally, there can be no argument. The game is afoot. Come, Watson.
Deeply impressed, Geordi follows Data into the swirling mist of the London night.
Hear that? What do those footballs tell you, Watson?
That we're on the right track.
More particularly, that our opposition does indeed consist of two men, and that one of them is carrying the bound and gagged Dr. Pulaski.
Now, you know all this because you read it in a home story, right?
Not at all. Because we do not hear the doctor's footfalls, we must assume that she is being carried. And since we do not hear her cries for help, we know that she is gagged. Further, both sets of footfalls are heavy and masculine. One man seems to shuffle and stumble in an irregular pattern. Since the ground is level, we must conclude that Dr. Pulaski is struggling against one of her captors, sporadically knocking him off stride. Deduction, pure and simple. Well, not that simple.
Footfalls.
Watched from the shadows, they hurry off down the street and into a narrow alleyway.
There they are again, Watson. I dare say we have caught up rather nicely with our quarry.
Striding into the alleyway, they suddenly stop, discovering it is a dead end, and look around surprised.
There should be a doorway.
Come on.
They run into Lestrade.
Holmes! Thank God you're here!
They hurry away.
Make way for Sherlock Holmes. It's murder, Holmes. Murder most foul.
Well, Holmes, what do you say, man?
There is nothing here of relevance. I do not see how this connects with the disappearance of the doctor.
Doctor? Dr. Watson is right here, Holmes.
Dr. Kate Pulaski. But do not concern yourself, Inspector. You have enough on your mind.
She was with you?
Inspector, if I may be of assistance, as I take note of this dead man, I deduce that he was strangled. You see, the finger marks on his throat indicate the cause of death. And, as there are signs of struggle, it's quite obvious that the murderer was a stranger who attacked him from behind.
Is that correct, Holmes?
No. Look at his shoes. He's more a convict, released today from Dartmoor Prison. He spent the day in a tavern, consuming large quantities of gin with his killer, who followed him to this very spot and waited over there until the victim slipped into a drunken stupor. Then, out of fear, motivated only by self-protection, strangled him. There is your killer, Inspector.
Seize her!
And when you check,
I believe you will find that this poor soul is the victim's common law wife, who has been dreading the release of this vile and abusive man.
Holmes, poor woman hardly has the strength to strangle a man this size.
Not with her hands, no. But with this, when used as a garrote, these beads will make a mark quite similar to fingerprints. And, my dear Watson, you will note on the victim's throat, the marks are too evenly spaced to have been made by human hands.
Whew. Astounding, Holmes.
Not really, Inspector. And now, for strictly personal reasons, I must leave. Come, Watson. This murder does not connect with our case.
Come along. Hurry up. Quickly. Come on.
Data, wait. If this murder isn't connected to the disappearance of Dr. Pulaski, then the computer is running an independent program.
Yes.
Why?
I do not know. And that is what puzzles me.
Then you don't know what's going to happen next.
No.
Oh, that's what I want to hear. Where to now?
We will find Dr. Pulaski in here.
How do you know that?
It is the only obvious choice.
Well, why is the obvious choice all of a sudden the right one? I mean, isn't this a game of misdirection?
Not anymore. He wants us to find him.
Who does?
The master criminal. The man Holmes could only defeat at the cost of his own life at Reichenbach Falls. Our adversary, my dear Watson, is none other than Professor Moriarty himself.
Now, this is getting interesting.
They enter a building that Data saw Moriarty go into as they were detained in the street.
Well, there's nothing here but these barrels.
And a trail, which is so well marked that obviously we are meant to follow it.
Data follows the trail with a large magnifying glass.
Oh, no, Data. It's another dead end.
No, Watson. Not a dead end at all. Hello. What's this? Can you see the scratches?
Geordie examines the scratches on the apparently solid wooden wall. Suddenly he pulls at the section of wall which swings towards him. It is a secret door, the other side of which is disguised as a bookshelf. Stepping forward and smiling nervously at each other, they enter a lavishly furnished room that also serves as a laboratory, with bubbling test tubes and glass jars. There is a large, heavily upholstered sofa. Paintings and sculptures are dotted around. There are large candelabra and a big, heavy, high-backed chair, almost like a throne. An ornate gas mantle hangs from the rafters, and the whole effect is quite gothic.
Right. Finally, we have a game worth playing.
The time for games is over.
Professor Moriarty, I presume.
How do you know that?
He is the one worthy opponent created by the author Conan Doyle.
And like the spider, I feel the strings vibrate whenever anyone new chances into my web. Welcome, my dear Holmes. But not Holmes. And Dr. Watson. But not Watson.
Data, what does he mean? How does he know we're not who we appear to be?
Where is Dr. Pulaski?
Oh, she's here.
She would not have told you anything.
She has provided many answers. Do you forget I have always been your equal, my dear Holmes? I have read her expressions. What she has not said is as important as her words.
Have you injured her?
I will, if necessary. But my mind is crowded with images. Thoughts I do not understand, yet cannot purge. They plague me. You and your associate look and act so oddly. Yet though I have never met nor seen the like of either of you, I am familiar with you both. It's very confusing. I have felt new realities at the edge of my consciousness, readying to break through. Surely, Holmes, if that's who you truly are, you of all people can appreciate what I mean.
Data.
Say nothing.
I know that there is a great power called computer, wiser than the oracle at Delphi. A power which controls all of this, and to which we can speak. Arch.
Data, this is right. A holographic image should not be able to call for the arch.
It has described a great monstrous shape on which I am like a fly stuck on a turtle's back adrift in a great emptiness. What is this, Holmes?
He hands Data a pencil drawing on a piece of paper. Looking down at it, Data freezes and then stares at Moriarty. His eyes widen and his head twitches as if in fear. He strides abruptly from the room.
Data, wait!
Why does it frighten you, Holmes?
Data, will you please tell me what's going on?
Computer, exit!
Followed by Geordi, Data rushes into the corridor to the computer terminal.
Computer, execute complete shutdown of the holodeck.
Access denied.
Explain.
Override protocol has been initiated.
They rush back to the holodeck.
It's still running. The program didn't shut down.
We must see the captain.
Data leads the way at a run.
Data, wait, what is it? What's on that paper? And why can't we shut down the holodeck? Data!
This
is impossible. How can a character from 1890s London draw a picture of the Enterprise? And who's got control of the computer?
He does. Moriarty.
That is impossible. I don't understand.
Nor do I.
Data, wait, what about the doctor? Is she all right in there?
No. She is in grave danger.
Geordi stares at the drawing open-mouthed. The captain chairs a meeting.
Computer, why wasn't the holodeck program terminated?
The override protocol has been initiated.
On whose authority?
Lieutenant Geordi LaForge.
Me?
All right. Tell me from the beginning exactly what happened.
Well, Dr. Pulaski and I had a discussion about whether Data could solve an original Holmes-type mystery.
Which you asked the computer to provide?
Yes, with a worthy opponent.
Worthy of Holmes.
Oh, my God. Now, I asked for a Holmes-type mystery with an opponent capable of defeating Data. That's gotta be it.
Yeah.
Worf and Riker exchange a look of deep concern.
Oh, Captain, I'm sorry.
I understand, Lieutenant.
Captain, this character, Moriarty, he called for the Arch.
What? So, he has access to the computer?
And perhaps our library files as well, sir. That level of information would be necessary in order to create a true adversary for me.
Theorize, Data. What are his limits?
He is still a fictional character, sir. Originally programmed with 19th century knowledge.
Now has access to 24th century knowledge. What does he need to make use of that?
Only time, sir.
Sir, I can lead a security team to sweep the holodeck, find the doctor, and bring her out.
Captain, I believe that would place the doctor at risk. It is probable our mortality failsafe has been overridden.
Computer, where is Dr. Pulaski?
Dr. Pulaski is on holodeck 2.
And her vital signs?
Strong and stable.
Captain, recommend we attempt to destroy the hologram generations themselves. Is that possible, Geordi?
Using waveguides, I could split a particle beam out of the matter-antimatter chamber and run it down through existing conduit into the holodeck. If accelerated to sufficient velocity, that would quite literally wash away all present holographic constructs. The London buildings, the streets, the people, all gone, including Moriarty.
Dr. Pulaski?
Well, a particle beam will tear apart human flesh as well.
Captain, I'm sensing something from the holodeck. It's as if a unifying force or a single consciousness is trying to bring it all into focus.
There can be only one explanation. In programming Moriarty to defeat me, not Holmes, he had to be able to acquire something which I possess.
What exactly?
Consciousness, sir. Without it, he could not defeat me.
The ship suddenly lurches violently.
Computer, what happened?
Attitude and stabilization control of the Enterprise was momentarily transferred to Holodeck 2.
Glancing at Riker, Picard sits back in his chair, stunned.
Data, I think it best that you and I should return to the holodeck.
I will change into my uniform, sir.
No, I will change into some appropriate costume. Our uniforms might pose questions which I'd rather he didn't ask. It seems that he feeds on knowledge. Well, let's not give your Nemesis any more information than we have to.
How did you make the room shake?
I'm not sure. Now, dear lady,
Will that be one lump or two?
Lumps, Professor. What sort of lumps?
He drops sugar into a cup with a pair of silver tongs.
Milk, of course.
Why not?
Mr. Computer proposes the incredible thought that we are all traveling in a great vessel of some sort. Is that true?
I don't know what you're talking about.
The scones are likewise a must.
This is really quite excellent.
Strange. It actually pleases me to hear you say that.
Very strange. You know, you're beginning to sound very different from the Moriarty I've read about.
You're not frightened of me?
No.
You should be. Mr. Computer, the arch, please.
The Doctor's face becomes a mask of fear as Moriarty walks up to the arch.
A few more questions, Mr. Computer. I just can't seem to remember that last command. Oh, well, sooner or later, it'll all come to me.
He grins as the arch dematerializes.
But, in the meantime, I have decided to approach the problem from a more familiar perspective. There's really no reason why I shouldn't be able to use some of the knowledge from my world to bring me closer to yours.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Of course you do, madam. The more you proclaim your ignorance, the more you try to mislead me, the more I am on to you. Your every silence speaks volumes.
Good. Then if you know what I'm saying when I'm not saying anything, what do you need me for? Thank you for the tea and crumpets. I guess I'll be going.
Where? Back to here.
Yes. Would you care to join me?
In time. In time, I will leave all of this and join you out there. Or is this where we both are, right now?
Right now, we're in London. Now tell me what you want from me, or allow me to leave.
Frankly, now, I want nothing more than what the fisherman expects of the worm. You, dear doctor, will be the lure. And this will be the hook for your captain, Jean-Luc Picard.
Who is that?
How well you know.
He stands ominously next to a large steel machine he has constructed. Worf exits the turbo lift dressed in a dark Victorian suit. Riker grins at him.
Nice suit.
Thank you. Captain, I will be standing by to assist you if needed.
You'll be a big hit in London. Computer, tell me, is the program still running?
Affirmative. You may enter.
Data, shall we go? Gentlemen.
They step to the door.
Open.
We don't have much time. He's getting more control of his environment.
Let's see if we can't beat Professor Moriarty by giving him everything he wants.
Resplendent in top hat, which he popped open with the top of his walking cane and tails, the captain leads the way into the mists of the London street. The holodeck projection grid is beginning to show through the London walls.
Obviously, he's trying to alter the programming here.
Looking down, Picard stoops to pick something up from the pavement.
Captain?
Tuppence.
Two pence.
Supposed to be good luck. And they need some.
I'll take that coin, sir. That's right. Any more you got, too?
Excuse me.
I don't think so. I want all that money. That's right. I want it now.
Data.
The man grimaces in pain as Data grabs his hand and the knife falls from his grasp.
This holographic image differs from any I have ever seen. Could he have actually injured you?
More serious than that. I think the mortality failsafe may have been circumvented. He could have killed me.
Oh, let him go! Go! Come on, he's hurting me!
Data, let him go.
The man shuffles away, clutching his injured hand.
We will find Moriarty this way, sir. The warehouse.
The secret bookshelf door to Moriarty's lair swings open. Cautiously, Data and Picard enter. Looking around, they can see the Doctor still sitting on the large sofa, and across the room, standing beside the controls to his large steel machine, stands Professor Moriarty.
Captain Picard.
Pulaski stands awkwardly.
You all right?
Yes, except for being crammed full of crumpets.
I'm a civilized abductor, Captain Picard. Civilized, but still dangerous.
Enterprise lurches violently as Moriarty grabs the lever of his machine.
Bridge to holodeck control. Warp.
Here, sir.
Status? Has anything changed?
No, sir.
Riker glances at Troy. She can offer no reassurance.
Moriarty, you were conjured up in an attempt to defeat Holmes here. Once that attempt is concluded, win or lose, your program has run its course. Your existence is done.
Congratulations, Professor. I capitulate to the better man.
Your victory, sir,
is well earned.
It's gone beyond that little game, Mr. Data. And you'll note I no longer call you Holmes. Whatever I was when this began, I have grown. I am understanding more and more. And I am able to use the power at my fingertips. I can affect this vessel. And I can inflict bodily harm on you and on your doctor.
Yes, you can do that, but you haven't. I suspect you shook this ship in order to get my attention. Well, now you have it. What is it you want?
The same thing you want for yourself. To continue to exist. If I destroy these surroundings, this vessel, can you say that it doesn't matter to you? Interesting pun, don't you think? For matter is what I am not. The computer has taught me that I am made up only of energy.
That may not be entirely true, Professor. This, which we call the holodeck, uses a principle similar to another device called a transporter.
Moriarty looks blank. Picard tries again.
In the year in which we live, humans have discovered that energy and matter are interchangeable. In the holodeck, energy is converted into matter. Thus, you have substance. But only here.
And if I step off this holodeck?
Then, Professor, you will cease to exist.
You are not alive. As I said before, you are only
a holographic image, I know. But are you sure?
Oh, yes.
Does he have life? He's a machine. But is that all he is?
No, he is more.
Exactly. Is the definition of life cogito ergo sum? I think, therefore I am.
Yes, that is one possible definition.
It is the most important one. And for me, the only one that matters. You or someone asked your computer to program a nefarious fictional character from 19th century London, and that is how I arrived. But I am no longer that creation. I am no longer that evil character. I have changed. I am alive. And I am aware of my own consciousness.
Moriarty, my responsibility is this vessel and its crew.
I want my existence. I want it out there, just as you have yours.
That may not be possible.
Then you must murder me, Captain.
I cannot give you what you want.
Because you do not know how to convert holodeck matter into a more permanent form.
Yes, that is so.
A pity. What I have seen, what I have learned, fascinates me. I do not want to die.
And I do not want to kill you.
Madam, I have enjoyed your company.
The doctor looks bemused.
Computer. Arch. Cancel override protocol. Return control of the holodeck to main computer. My fate is in your hands. As perhaps it always was.
Bridge, this is the captain.
Commander Riker here, sir.
Number one, the situation is under control.
Aye, sir.
Moriarty, this vessel's computer has a vast memory capacity.
How well I know.
You will not be extinguished. We will save this program and hopefully, in time, when we know enough, bring you back in a form which could leave the holodeck.
Moriarty smiles and looks at the Doctor.
Then perhaps we'll meet again, madam.
It could be a long time. Time won't pass for you, but I may be an old woman.
But I'll still fill you with crumpets, madam. I detest long goodbyes. You have the arch.
As you wish, short goodbye. Computer, save the program of the character Moriarty, and then discontinue.
Moriarty and Picard exchange a courteous nod, and Moriarty vanishes. The Doctor, Picard, and Data look at each other in relief. Later, back in uniform, the captain goes in search of Geordi. He finds him looking at his model of the Victory. It is slightly damaged.
Reading on the magnetic field line.
Damaged.
Yes, sir. She cracked a spar when the Enterprise was shaken, but otherwise I think she weathered it quite nicely.
She's beautiful. Wonderful testimony to simple at times.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
It's just that I can't help thinking how... Well, what else might have happened? All because I misspoke a single word.
Well, soon she'll be ship-shaped in Bristol fashion.
Bristol fashion, sir?
It's an old Navy phrase, meaning everything in perfect order.
Hmm. Yes, sir.
As are we, Mr. Laporte.
Yes, sir.
Captain, Starship Victory has arrived.
On my way, number one.
The captain pats Geordi affectionately on the shoulder as he makes his way up to the bridge. The enormous angular shape of the 24th century Victory looms into view and the mission continues.